You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, we're talking with Anne-Marie Lacaine. Anne-Marie, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, thank you for asking me.
So, Anne-Marie, you're in London right now? Is that where we're talking from?
Yes, we're talking from London.
And how is it there? I mean, just I don't usually start off with that, but, you know, London always seems so kind of romantic to me somehow.
Well, the sun is shining, which is unusual for the moment. And it's actually really cold. But I was in Helsinki last week working on a new performance, so it's warmer than it was in Helsinki. But
so let's jump right into that. What is it that you're preparing now or working on?
Well, a lot of my performances, I make a contact within a country, and then that contact builds. And mostly I do performance, what I'd call collaborative performance, with groups of people, because I'm interested in the social dynamics of groups and how one comes to feel that one's a member of a group. And also I'm interested in the difference between, say, if I ask a group of people to do something, what I think in my head, which is usually a neat little structure, and what actually happens. And I'm always documenting these performances. And the reason I was in Helsinki is sometimes people say, oh, I don't have any connections anywhere. And I've taught for some time in the Royal College and Central St. Martin's. And I remember I always tell the students, well, you do actually have contacts. Think about the people you know and then start from there. And so I have to tell myself this sometimes. So I was going back to Helsinki sort of on spec with an idea that I had about a performance, and I think it's going to happen, which is good, because it's going to link up with a performance I've already done in London, and yeah, we shall see. So I was just there last week, and earlier in the summer I did two performances in Philadelphia, and I spent a lot of time going back and forth between London and Philadelphia. So, I suppose I travel quite a bit in the sort of work I do.
That sounds like it. So when you say you document them, and I'd like to go into the details of perhaps one of them that's coming together now or that you recently produced, but when you document them, you're documenting the collaborative process as well, it sounds like, not simply documenting the performance?
Yeah, well, this is where the boundaries get smudgy, I think, because what I'm interested in is if I say I do performances, it has nothing to do with me other than I'm a kind of poor person's director, really. And also it's not based in a theatrical tradition. It's almost I'm interested in rehearsals, and my performances are almost like rehearsals in a public place, because that's the other thing. Mostly they're site-specific, and they're in public places, because I like the idea of putting this small structure into an unexpected place to see what happens. And let's talk through, say, for example, the most recent one I did in Philadelphia. I did it at, I don't know if you know, the Icebox. It's a big performance space in North Philadelphia. It's huge industrial, former 19th century industrial cold storage building. It has amazing echo to it. And
wow, I don't know that space. It sounds amazing.
It's really worth checking out. Philly's got a really good arts community, and I've done other performances there. And so this space was, my idea was to form a crescendo, and to form a crescendo by height and sound. So I invited people to come to this building, and I was going to film them sort of, they had a long wall, say 100 feet long. The walls were, it was like a kind of oblong box, this space. And if I said hello, there was like a 5-second echo. It'd go, hello, whoa, 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 whoa. And I thought, well, what would happen if you ask people to, first I'd line them up exactly in order of height so that minimally they form a crescendo from the shortest to the tallest. And then I set out an area within the filming area of a camera. I was doing video of them and said, we put a piece of tape on the floor and I asked them to walk along this long wall. And immediately they come into this, the filming area. They start repeating initials. Because my other thing with getting people to perform is I want them, it's mostly task-based. I want them to do something for me, but it's not a difficult thing. And I want them to feel free probably to innovate or invent within.
And the people that you're talking to, they don't have to have any experience with performance.
No, no. And it's much better if they don't. And in this particular case, first of all, I was thinking there'd be a whole lot of people. But it was a Sunday afternoon. There'd been some timetabling changes. And everybody was at the beach. It was the end of August. So probably, anyway, there were enough people there. And one woman had a studio upstairs in this building. She said, oh, can I bring my dog? And I love it when things like that happen. I said, sure. So suddenly this procession becomes a walk in the country as well. And none of these people have any sense, and I have no sense what's going to happen. What's important is we together figure out what this performance might be or what it means. And so I lined everybody up. I said, speak initials over and over, any initials. They can be your initials, anything you want. And so they started, and they started kind of quite softly. And then I said, okay, let's do it again. They're starting to get the hang of it more, sort of spirit with what they're doing. But I'm not saying, oh, make sure you march in order or whatever. But the thing that has been ordered is, before the performance started, I measured all of them so that they exactly lined up in height. I mean, they're walking any old way. They're dressed any old way. One woman had a handbag. One woman has a dog. But they're absolutely precise. And I realized in the filming that this makes a real difference. So they started saying this, and like one guy was saying, okay, 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 over and over. Another guy was saying, PHL, 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 which is the code for Philadelphia Airport because he hates it so much. And the sound was extraordinary. The sound's absolutely amazing. And some more people heard it from the corridor and came in. And then when it came time to edit this sound, because we did it about, I suppose we ran through, and I often do this in performances, we ran through about 7 goes, and we'd start, for example, okay, let's start from the right-hand side. Let's start from the left-hand side. Let's stop at a different place. And so people almost, they'd get closer and closer and closer and closer together. And they formed such a precise group. You'll have to look on the, it's on Vimeo, and it's just called Crescendo. And the space subsequently I was going to show the work in, the wall is 100 feet long, this wall we filmed against, and 25 feet high. And they have a video system, so you can show your work like that. So I thought, well, I want to keep the full frame of the video work. So I thought, what happens if we just added in 2 takes of it, but with sound coming from one of the takes only, side by side? And suddenly it was absolutely magical. Walking along, the people are, they're like drawing lines with people. They go in and out and extend and compress. And so I learned a whole lot from that performance. And it's kind of led me into thinking more about that whole continuum with sound, where you've got kind of no structure, what we just call noise. And then if you add pitch or rhythm or intention, then you go on this continuum, I think, between noise, dissonance, intention, music. And nowadays music has a whole lot of the dissonance and the randomness as well. So, but still that whole thing of what happens with the sound, and if it's a concerted effort, what would happen? And I've got a bunch of performances. It's kind of hard on the radio to describe.
No, but you're doing it well, and Crescendo is a very interesting one. I've seen a video of that, and perhaps people will have links to it in this interview as well. But one of the things that struck me as a little bit funny in there that you haven't mentioned is one of the performers has a dog with them.
Yeah. No, I did mention there was one woman. She had her dog, but then the dog just decides to bark just briefly. He's very nice dog. He's a sheepdog. He was called Shep, in fact. And just at one point, suddenly he barks. And I'm really happy with those non-sequiturs. I mean, what was your sense of, oh, there's a dog there? What did that make you think about the performance?
It made me think that there was going to be something unusually unpredictable about it. You know, I was waiting for a bark or an interruption or something because I would think that's one performer that you can't really control or
exactly. Yeah, and I remember I did another. Quite often I do. There are some similarities in my performances. I like the idea of, I'm interested in ritual, I'm interested in processions, things like that, and possibly I grew up with them. My father was a Lutheran minister, and so I grew up surrounded by, you know, him telling everybody what to do and watching lots of processional things. But I did a thing called Reading on the Train, a performance on a disused suburban railway line in North London. It's now become it's called the Parkland Walk, and it's not far from where I live in North London. And the platforms are still there, which is really interesting. And but the track is just, you know, a dirt track now. And so I thought, well, let's film this and let's form the group, whoever shows up, into like a choral line, as if, you know, a group of choristers would process down the middle of a cathedral or something. And so I called it Reading on the Train, and that's another thing. Sometimes I like to play with words and with the sense of, is on a location or on subject matter, as in reading about the train. And so I asked everybody to bring books on trains, and we also compiled a reading list. And so they all had their books. And one participant, for whatever reason, brought a whistle. And that was just perfect, because it was like the conductor's whistle in the old-fashioned films, like Brief Encounter and that. And the film starts with the whistle. And so this guy had this whistle. And again, a bit like the dog, it just kind of focused the performance, and it's ended up being a performance. Everybody loves trains, and so I've had more views of that almost than any other work I've done.
That's interesting, and the collaborative process. I mean, talking about the dog, the whistle, and you pulling all these people together. I mean, you're dealing with a more unpredictable bunch than your father did. You're trying to put together something that people are going to see. You know, at the beginning of the interview, you talked about how much you, and I'm paraphrasing, but you know, just enjoyed the collaborative process itself, and how much it's about working with people itself. So it sounds like what you're saying kind of references that a bit, because there are these unpredictable elements that come in. But are there other elements that that you document or that you think about that aren't so apparent in this video that are part of what you're doing in terms of collaboration? I've done theater, and I know that there can be an enormously exciting just energy when people are working together, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that happens is there is a loyalty amongst my group. And over the years, I've compiled a kind of mailing list of people. And there's another project I've got. I don't know if you saw that. It's called the Annual Group Photograph. And it's theannualgroupphotograph.com. It's the world's longest title for a website. And I started that in 97, and we're in year 19 now. And one of the things about these events is that there's a sense among the group, you get a great sense of accomplishment. But first of all, there's some sense of loyalty amongst people who, you know, see each other once a year. It doesn't matter when during the year, and they know it's going to carry on, and they want to come and see what's happening. But then there's that other sense, like I did a performance in front of a row of lock-up garages for public housing in North London. And it was a series where, I can't think what public housing, in London, public housing has, like you'll have a high-rise block. And then there's these really rubbish garages for whoever happens to have a car. And these are kind of falling down, but they're all just lined up together. And so I decided that this was my performance space for this thing I was calling Encore. And one of the challenges here was this was a sort of curated performance. It was called LUPA, Lockup Performance Art, and it happened over 2.5 years. And every Friday, once a month, we'd all two or three artists would present, or actually maybe four, in the evening. And I'd never presented for an audience, so I thought, right, I don't have an audience here. What I did is lined up a whole lot of chairs. One of the organizers had them left over from doing her degree show at Goldsmiths, and lined them up on the parking line, so they were all in a long straight line. Everybody immediately sat down in these chairs that were facing the doors of the garages. And I said, right, now there's your audience. All the rest of you are performers. And what we're going to do is we're going to take our cue from a bunch of parents in Brooklyn who recorded the sound of applauding their children at the end of a children's concert. So you can imagine how enthusiastic that was. And I talked about how you take I suppose the sequence of things that happens in taking a bow. You take a bow individually, then you acknowledge all your fellow performers, and all the fellow performers grab hands together and take a bow together. Then you clap the audience. Then you think, okay, time for an encore. You walk out, wait a few heartbeats, walk back in. Then the audience stands up and cheers you. And so they went through this whole thing. And it was so funny as we were filming. And afterwards, I don't think I've ever had such a positive reaction. You're all coming up and saying, that was amazing. That was incredible. And then this guy wrote a review, and he said, I was astonished at how wonderful I felt for, taking applause for something I hadn't done. And so there's that sense. This one was a particular example of it, of the kind of feeling, weird feeling of accomplishment, I suppose at the simplest level, of doing things as a group, because I'm always dreaming up things where everyone is needed equally, and the thing won't work unless we all do this thing. And so that cohesive nature of the event seems to, it feels quite interesting. It feels like years ago when I was at university, I played bassoon in the orchestra. And I remember one place where we gave a concert, and we were, I was thinking, I knew it was a good one. And I remember that feeling of everyone having done it well. And, of course, it's hilarious in relation to what I'm asking people to do, because we're not talking about skill. We're talking about, like, ritualized actions. And ritualized actions are always something simple. They're always, the significance of them becomes not how difficult are they, but what we think they mean, you know. So it's always a sense, hey, I've contributed equally to this, and this wouldn't have happened without me. But how this gets documented sometimes is pretty hit and miss. Because I would think
that would be difficult to document, because we're talking about something that's so palpable, that in a way, just like the reviewer was saying, it was about an experience and a feeling he had that would be difficult to document how that came about.
I'm kind of interested, and I know there's a long discussion, a contemporary discussion goes on about documentation of performance and the nature of the performance, and is it only performance if it's real, if you're performing. And I'm kind of in a halfway position there, because one, we don't have an audience. I never think of anything as being an audience. Sometimes the audience is just the public in the street. Like, I've got a thing called Fanfare for Crossing the Road. It's a really big project. But the documentary form is also of interest, because I like the limitations of the documentary form. I want people to look at it and think, what's that dog doing there? Or what on earth is going to happen? Why did the guy blow the whistle? Or why are these people all randomly walking all over the place counting? That I don't want the viewer to look at the documentation and think about skill. I want them to have that sense that they're looking at something that's real. And the way that, for completely different reasons, a lot of times shaky video from war and disaster situations is very compelling, because you know it's real. And I mean, that, you know, that's a completely different sort of thing. But the realness of what you're watching in my sort of unusual performances, I think, is what usually pulls people in.
Absolutely. That's what pulled me in and made me think, what's happening with that dog? What's going on there? Even though there was something very beautifully produced about that video, it wasn't kind of handheld and shaky.
Mostly I have really simple camera angles, because that whole question of the author, I don't want this to be, do some authorship minimally, but mostly I want this to be about the camera acting just as a window. But one performance I should mention is quite a big one, where it's different, where I'm not depending on people to show up. My audience are usually they're the people who have come along because they decide to come along. But in this case, mostly they're the unwitting, because described simply, I don't know if you saw this one, I get people from different countries. I've filmed in London, Helsinki, Lisbon, Cardiff in Wales, New York, Philadelphia. I get musicians to mimic the sound of the acoustic sound for the blind. Like in England, pretty commonly, it's beep, 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 beep. So you know when to cross. And so I dress up the musicians in uniforms, and I set up the camera facing, looking straight across the road. And I started doing this in London, and have just carried on. And each time, it's become really interesting, because it's like it becomes a portrait of the country as much as anything else. It's such an ordinary situation, and everybody's stopping to look at these musicians, you know, mimicking the signals. Like New York one was really funny, because I worked with some students from Manhattan School of Music, and I don't know if you've heard it, there aren't very many crossings in New York for the blind. I don't know what the blind do, but it sounds like a machine gun. It goes, and so this percussionist, this student, was really totally up for trying to mimic this, and he he found in the percussion department something called a log drum. And so he's going, rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat. And the people crossing, it's so funny. And they're going, oh. And then, of course, what happens is people tend to hang around because they know what's going to happen now and see other people's responses. You know, what are they going to think? So quite often, like when I was in Lisbon, I had there were some Spanish tourists watching the crossing there. They stayed the whole time. And finally, they decided to direct the trumpet players before they walked across the road like they owned the whole thing.
Wow, that's fantastic.
I know. And then they sat on these steps that became the end of the video, clapping as the guys decided, because before we'd had a rehearsal, and they decided to march off in step. You know, and we had it at the rehearsal in Lisbon. We could only do it at night because it's the only time all the musicians could come together. And there was this old drunk guy down by the river. And he came up to me and he's standing in front of me, swaying around. And I've got the camera and, of course, I'm looking across to the musicians. I go, okay, start. And he's going, oh, what's going on? Oh. And then he hears the signal and he dutifully turns around and staggers across the road. So all the incisions into what's real, they're small things, and mostly we're staying harmless. Mostly I don't ask for permission to do these things.
But you're doing so many of them, it seems. I mean, this is a, you know, your practice, and it seems that you're traveling a lot and always producing these. Is it funded by the different places that you go to, or how is it that you continue to do all this? Because it doesn't seem like the videos are in the marketplace, or that this is about work
they're
sold.
Not profitable. I mean, for a long time, my money job has been teaching. I'm teaching less now, but that was great too, because I was teaching in Royal College and St. Martin's, and they're good colleges, you know. So half the time you're teaching, but you're also always talking to people about ideas. And sometimes I've had funding from the Arts Council. I've had funding from the Royal College. I got, and this was a big door opener. This was a wonderful thing to happen. I got Franklin Furness. I got a foundation, you know, from them, the performance people in New York. They funded my performance in New York, which was fabulous. And I got a commission for when I went to Wales, to Cardiff in Wales. I worked with opera singers there doing the beep beeps, and that was one of my favorite ones. They were all standing waiting in their gold capes and tricorn hats, and the rugby fans had come for a match. I mean, you couldn't make it up, the encounter between the rugby fans and the opera singers. And so a lot of times it's totally stitched together, and sometimes I think, I just have to do this. One way or another, I'll fund it. And it's self-funded. Plus, I have family, as you can probably tell from my accent. I have family in the States. I have friends in the States, these long-suffering friends. I come and stay with them. And so, you know, I can go and stay with these friends. I have family in Norway. I have, you know, and they're up for these things, too, because you can combine it. So it's a dreadful way to make a living, I agree. But this whole business of being like a poor person's filmmaker, I don't know, I'm really interested in these social questions. And I think, okay, we have to make this happen. You know?
Well, it's so much about the process. I mean, there's, for lack of a better word, but while all kinds of collateral things start happening around this with people who are nearby or the audience, it sounds from your voice, your expression, all this, what's exciting about this is actually setting up and doing the performance and all the different elements that people bring to it that are completely unpredictable.
I know, and it's like just before a performance is going to happen, I think, why do I do this? Because I've set myself the ultimate kind of nerve-wracking situation, because my invitation to perform is always entirely open. I never know who's going to come, if anybody. Like the Philadelphia one, in the end, I was really interested in the fact that because there were fewer people, it was like beads in an abacus. They appeared to be sliding up and down the wall. And that might not have happened if there were more people. But you just never know who's going to show up. And I did one in Tate Modern, and they were, you know, if you say, okay, Tate Modern, I did one in Arsenal Football Grounds, places like that, you know you're going to get a whole ton of people. But some of them, I'll think to myself, this is too much. I'm just going to go and do something quiet and sit in the studio. But then afterwards you think, no, this is why I did it, because it is this great feeling. You jump off and you really, I'm better now than I used to be. I used to be more controlling. I'm better at really collaborating with my participants, because their sense of what might happen almost always opens up, enriches, you know, the structure, the beginning of the idea that I start with.
I love that, and you know, as you move around and do all this, it seems that you're very busy. There's all these different places that you performed in, and the Tate and other spaces seem more obvious. But how are you finding all of these spaces? Are people now coming to you, or are you always seeking out unusual spaces to perform and getting permission, I guess, to perform?
They almost always come from me, which is a reason why I'm useless or not useless, but I find it very difficult sometimes to, you know, the sort of things that are asking for proposals. Unless I've been to the space, I find it really hard to come up with, oh, I'm going to do this. And the ways I get ideas, sometimes it's just a phrase, a corner of a room. It makes me think of this. Things just grow on these little sentences, if you like, that just pop into your head. And I did the first performance I did in Helsinki was a joint simultaneous group photograph, actually group videograph, of two groups that were in spaces that were roughly similar. It was Trafalgar Square with a neoclassical National Gallery on the north side facing south, and Senate Square in Helsinki with the Lutheran Cathedral, another neoclassical building facing south. And I thought, what would happen if I put two groups in these two countries, and this was 2004, and we link up with mobile phones? And mobile phones were, I kept thinking, oh, I hope this is going to happen. And it was wonderful but the way I got the idea for it was I went to visit this, I've got a friend who's a music producer in Helsinki, and we're good friends. I went to visit her one Easter, and I was walking across Senate Square, and I thought, I don't know, where do these ideas come from? And I just thought, at that point, Trafalgar Square had just been pedestrianized, and so it had suddenly properly become a square rather than, you know, all the traffic driving through it right in front of the National Gallery. And so I thought, well, quite often this was the fourth annual group photograph. Quite often the seventh annual group photograph. They're tropical, too. Something's happened that year that triggers my thinking about it. So, yeah, a lot of times these ideas just happen seeing a space. Because I dreamt up the crescendo one. I should say I also did very different crescendos for an artist's weekend exhibition in the middle of Sweden in a place called Värnamo. And there it was in a disused rubber factory, and they said I could have the loading bay was my place to work. And I thought, fantastic. So then I thought, of course, you have to have this long, long line of people doing something. So a lot of times it's wandering past a place or just noticing something on the street. Or I spend, quite often, I spend time sitting on the top of buses going through London, and ideas start to come together then. Or
when and then once you find the space or you think it's interesting, then you make a proposal to that space or somehow make a connection with it.
Sometimes it's harder than others. You know, sometimes you can just kind of set up and you'll be all right. Like when I did my first fanfare for Crossing the Road, and that was in front of the Albert Hall in London, and the Royal College of Art is right next door. And so I was kind of contacting the local police, calling from the Royal College of Art. And so it still happens, the Royal, this, that, and everything. It's still a good contact to have. So they said, oh, yes, ma'am, that'll be fine. I'm sure it'll all be, you know. And I explained I wasn't going to disrupt the traffic signals or anything. Whereas by the time I got to New York with that one, Martha Wilson at Franklin Furnace, she said, no, don't ask the police, just do it. So everywhere is different. But the hardest, one of the hardest places to find permission was in that Trafalgar Square, Senate Square one, because the Greater London Authority, as it was then, the local government for London, to try and get permission to just essentially film a group of people standing on the steps, it was so difficult. So finally I called up the National Portrait Gallery, and there's a, do you know what the fourth plinth is? There's an empty plinth in Trafalgar Square, and it's become a contemporary art place, and Hans Hacke with a skeletal horse is on top of this plinth at the moment. But anyway, I rang up the director of the National Portrait Gallery, and I said, well, look, you don't know me, but I know that you work with the fourth plinth, and I wondered if you had any suggestions about how I could approach the GLA to get permission to do this thing. And he was so helpful. He said, just contact this woman, describe it as a semi-official art event. And so I did just that, and it worked, you know. Half the time it's knowing the right person to ask for this key phrase, this key kind of connection that'll unlock it. But sometimes it takes a long time.
Well, I'm so glad that you continue to pursue that. And Marie, it's been such a pleasure talking with you. And in closing, is there something, is there a performance anywhere that you want to direct listeners to in the future? Or this will be coming out and shared in this month to different people around the world. So it could be anywhere. But if there's an upcoming event, you could tell us a little bit about now. Or if you want to leave us with something else entirely.
Well, upcoming events I can't tell you about yet, as is the nature of my events. They sometimes they happen at quite short notice because I don't fit well doing these kind of things into gallery timetables 2 years hence. So I do have things coming up, but I can't tell you. But I'd love people to go see the Crescendo in the Philadelphia performance, because that's opened up some good questions for me. And I can say that exploration of sound is going to continue. And also, I suppose, as a work, the ongoing fanfare for Crossing the Road, I think the next city is Dublin. But I can't, you know, I suppose I could just say to go and look at the website, because there are three things that I'm hoping are coming up soon. but I haven't totally agreed them. We're getting close. So all I can ever say to people is watch this space, plus join my mailing list if you happen to be in the relevant country.
Well, very good. I certainly will, and I hope other people will too. Anne-Marie, thanks so much for talking with me today. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.